Welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server Version 8 Security Concepts. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide 2. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to WebSphere Application Server Version 8 security topics. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted. Then we will open the lines for live question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. Moving on to slide 3, at this time, I would like our panel of experts to introduce themselves for today's call. First, we have Josh Kessler. Please go ahead, Josh.
Hi, my name is Josh Kessler. I'm with the WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support team on the WASWeb group, and we handle security.
Hi, this is Ajit Jariwala, and I'm also with the WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support with WASWeb team and supporting the WebSphere Application Server for more than 10 years. Today, we will be discussing about the WebSphere security concept.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Varun Thalapragra. I'm with the WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support team in a WASWeb group where we handle all the security components from past 4 years. And we'll be talking about more into the security components further. Thanks.
Thank you. Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4. Please go ahead, Josh.
Okay. We're going to cover a number of questions on the following topics. We're going to go over security domains, header repositories, Espinego, how it works, and the default SSL root certificates. Starting WAS 7, these technologies either began or were expanded upon from version 7 onwards. So it does cover 7, 8, and 8.5 application servers. Next slide.
Thank you, Josh. Now we'll begin our question and answer session with questions that were pre-submitted to us, and I will hand the presentation over to our panel of experts.
Hi, this is Ajit again from the IBM WebSphere Level 2 teams, and the question number 1 is how to utilize the security domain to leverage runtimes. So let's move on to the slide number 6, please. So answer to the question 1 is basically, we introduced the security domain in WAS v7 feature and onwards. And security domains that can override subset of the global security configurations, which means allow more flexibility to set up the security for applications that use for authentication and authorizations. You know, can be customized security settings for applications, as well as the service integration bus. The security domains also allows different scope configurations. You know, so if you want to configure for specific JVM, you can configure the different scope, which I will talk about in next questions. And also that if no scope configure defined, then it's basically defaults to the global security configurations. You know, and in order to implement and configure the security domain, the global security has to be configured before you can do anything. You know. So let's move on to next slide, please. In this chart, you can see how the security domains was implemented in WebSphere 7 and onwards. When you look at this topology, you know, it's basically you have a cell, and you have a node 1 and node 2, you know. And obviously, the cell where it's pointing to the current global security configurations, which has a security.xml throughout the cell. And then you can configure different domains. So, for example, like a domain 1, it's configured to the cell. And domain 2, it's configured for like server 1, you know, and then also
If you look at the server 1.2 and server 2.1, that is configured as a part of the security domain 3. So as you can see that you have more flexibility to configure security domains, you know, and that will allow you more leverage in the runtime. So, for example, you have a global security configure, and if you want to have a different LDAP configure for server 1, you'll be better off configuring the security domains and define a scope for that specific JVM runtime. You know, I think it's a very cool design. And let's go into the next slide, please. This panel is basically showing you an example, you know, that global security has all the other attributes like Java 2 security, TAI configurations, Spinego, and whatnot, you know. And on the other side, you are looking at the security domains model where once you define the security domains, you have a different attribute that you can configure for specific JVMs in a runtime. So let's go on to the next slide, please. So question number 2, how to configure the security domain for the different process? Okay, next slide, please. So slide number 10 is basically showing you the sample configuration, how you can configure the security domain. So once you have a global security configured, then you can go into the security domains panel on your security on the left-hand side of it, on your admin console, then you can see that there are various options for it. I would suggest that you always, I would recommend that you try to copy the global security domains, you know, with a new domain. So you have the global attribute already with the domain, and then you can modify the domain based on your needs. So here you can see like a test domain, you know, and basically I'm scoping that I want to use a security domain for just only server 1. So that's what it's showing you in this panel. So slide number 11, please. So again, these are the different attributes in a security domain configuration. So here, for an example, since I create a security domain and now I want to map the security attribute, let's say, for example, like a user realm, I can click on user realm and I can define that I want to use a specific LDAP for applications authentication authorization, then I can come in here and then set up the new LDAP configuration for it. You know, obviously you have to have a scope defined for that specific runtime, you know. And you can also configure a different attribute for, like, if you want to configure like a JAWS authentication logging module for a specific JVM, you know, you can do that here as well. Next slide, please. Slide number 12. So some of the answer I already discussed, but in addition to that, it's very important to know where the configurations file reside. So I'll talk about a little bit on that. I guess everyone's aware that global security configuration is stored in profile homes, cell name directory structure in your master configurations, you know. And also the security domain that is configured in your profile config, and we call it as a WAS policy. It's not in the cell name, but we place it in the config under WAS policy, and you'll see the domain name for your security domain configuration, the XML file. And the file name called security domain map.xml, you know, and that's where you'll see different user registry configurations and what is a scope setup, that kind of stuff. Slide number 13, please. Again, answer to question 2, we have a lot of good information on Info Center, especially in this chart. I'm giving you the link that will give you all the information about how to configure and get into more in-depth about the security domains, you know. And also, we have IBM Red Books available as well.
aspect, slide number 14. I'll pass it on this question to Varun.
Hey, this is Varun Thallaplegra again, and I'll be covering this topic on how to configure the federated repositories in the WebSphere application server. Let's discuss that. First of all, what is the main drawback with a standalone LDAP configuration? The main drawback is that you can configure only one LDAP relay with a standalone LDAP configuration. And then why to go for the federated repository? Let's say if you have two applications, let's say, and if one application is using, let's say, Active Directory, and the another one is using the Tivoli Directory Server, then if you want to configure both the relayms, it is not possible with the standalone LDAP configuration. With the federated repositories, you can configure both these repositories, and you can use it to have the same relay information. So make a note that this is applicable from 6.1 onwards. Before 6.1, it is not possible to go for the federated repositories. So if you want WebSphere to use more than one repository, then you can always go with these federated repositories. For example, the repositories are file-based repositories or LDAP repositories like Microsoft Active Directory, as well as Tivoli Directory Server, any LDAP server which is following the RFC requirements for the LDAPs. Moving on to slide number 15. So when you use the federated repositories functionality, all of the configuration for these repositories, which you specify as part of the federated repositories, will become active. And only one thing we need to be very careful is to make sure that the user ID and the distinguished name should be unique in these user repositories that you configured. Otherwise, if you have configured multiple repositories, and if you have multiple users in two different relays, then you will end up with exceptions. WebSphere will throw an exception that you cannot have the IDs and DNs in multiple repositories, whereas those should be unique. So basically, it's a limitation to have a unique ID and the DN in all of these repositories. So how can we configure these federated repositories? So one way is to configure during the installation of WAS. It will ask you to see if you wanted to configure the security. There you can select the option where it creates a federated repository with a default file-based repository. So all the user information, of course, whatever the user information, if you are using the file-based, will be stored in the file registry.xml file, including the usernames and passwords. So if you are not, let's say if you are not chosen the security to be enabled during the installation of the WAS, then you can configure from the admin console also in the security, global security section. So once you are in the security panel, global security panel, and go for the federated repositories there, you need to provide the relay name there as well as the primary administrative username, where name of the primary admin administrative privileges where they have for that particular user already defined in the registry that you need to provide there. And then you need to provide all the other default ones you can take, and then go for the configure button. Then you need to, when you click on the configure button, basically go to the next slide, please. In this one, as soon as you configure, you can ask for, you can give the all the repository relay names and primary administrative usernames that I talked. You need to give there, and then you need to, you can add a separate repository here, LDAP repository, whatever it shows on the left hand side screenshot. then once you click on the LDAP repository, you can configure all the new repository information here by providing all the information like unique identifier name and directory type and primary host name for the LDAP and the port. If you are using non-secure port, you can give 389 as the default port, and you can even go for a secure port, 636. Then you can here configure the LDAP for the failover, where you can configure a backup LDAP server, similar LDAP server that you have all this information in the primary one. Once the primary one goes down, you can WebSphere will failover to the failover LDAP server here, and then you, if you want to provide the bind distinguished name, bind DN, and the passwords, these bind DN and passwords will be provided by the WebSphere the LDAP admins, where you can get that information from them, and then give all the login properties. Let's say if you have a if you want to use the login property or user ID as mail, then the users can log in with that information, and then give the other details, like you can take the defaults, and if you want the LDAP was to be securely connected to LDAP server, then you can go for the required SSL configuration. You can take all these defaults and give whatever directory type or whatever the LDAP you are trying to configure. You can select from the list and select one, and then you can add it to the repository. Moving on to the next slide. Once you configure the LDAP, then what one need to do is they need to add the base entry to the RealM. We need to click on the add base entry to the RealM to add that into the into the structure. Once they add that, you can provide whatever the distinguished name there. For that's where it starts searching. The LDAP can start searching. You need to provide that information, and this information also it can be gathered from LDAP admins, where these tree structure need to start searching from this information and then save the changes. Once it is done, you need to make sure that whatever the federated repositories you selected in the global security panel, you need to make it as a current one so that the federated repositories will be in use. So once that is done, whatever the user you are trying to, you can search with the user from the users and group mapping section and try to see, search for that particular user if that particular user is being pulled from the LDAP or not. Moving on to slide 18. I'll pass over to Josh for the next question.
All right, thanks, Varun. Question number four, what is the purpose of Espanego single sign-on and how does it work? I'll explain that. Let's move to slide 19. So the answer to this question, I just wanted to make this as simple as I could. I mean, we could do an entire presentation just on this. So the goal is to allow a Microsoft Windows desktop domain users to seamlessly single sign-in to protected applications running on WebSphere via LTPA tokens. That is the goal, is it ultimately will use LTPA. Well, this process starts when you power up the client PC and when you log into the Windows domain. When you do that, you will obtain Kerberos TGT, which is a ticket granting ticket, and that's stored on the OS itself. And at that point, you won't need to log in anymore. Once you access the application server, whatever application that you have configured with Espanego, in a roundabout way, it will use that TGT to, in a way, convert that to an LTPA token. I just want to stress that it doesn't really do any conversion. The Espanego technology, it acts like a bridge that does this conversion, but it's really happening on the client and the server side. Let's go to slide 20. So this bridge is possible because the Kerberos credentials are carried by the client in the browser via an Espanego Negotiate HTTP header. where they are validated and inserted into an LTPA token and then sent back to the client browser for SSO. There's a link there. I didn't want to get to too much detail because it could just go on forever, but that link has a topology flow from start to finish, how the logon process actually works. I just wanted to stress that, you know, WebSphere doesn't do NTLM authentication. It is for LTPA. And then there's another webcast replay that I did where I go more in-depth in configuring it. Another WSTE there. We'll move on to slide 21. So question 5, how does SSL certificate renewal and expiration work with the new default root certificates? Let's move on to slide 22. This is something that was added in WebSphere 7. So I'll read this here and then talk about it a little more. So if a personal certificate has been compromised or is about to expire, then it should be renewed. Renewing a certificate recreates a certificate with all the information from the original certificate, but with the new expiration period. Only self-signed and chain certificates created by WebSphere can be renewed. If the certificate used to sign the chain certificate is not in the root key store, then the default root certificate is used to renew the certificate. So this concept, I never really found that it was explained anywhere, so I wanted to bring this up here because in 6.1 and lower versions, we didn't have this default chain certificates for WAS. So we would get a lot of people that would come in and try to configure, you know, recreate personal certificates with a longer lifespan. And with the root certificates, you really don't need to do that anymore. The leaf certificate does last for a year by default, but since it's signed by the root, which by default is 15 years, you don't have to really do anything because it's going to be trusted for up to 15 years. So even if that leaf expires and renews, which it will automatically now, you don't have to go, you know, exchange signers on all your nodes and sync your cell and all that kind of stuff. Let's move to slide 23. So a chain personal certificate is a personal certificate that is created by using another personal certificate to sign it. This chaining allows a certificate to be signed with a certificate that has a longer lifespan. So you no longer need to worry about manually syncing nodes after renewal occurs to ensure that all your nodes in the cell obtain the updated signer certificate, because by default, all personal certificates in a cell are now signed by the same default root signer, which was created during installation. So even though the renewal for the leaf certificate is 1 year, you don't have the administrative overhead to ensure that the certificate remains trusted after expiry, since it lasts 15 years by default. And there's a link there that takes to the Info Center and kind of explains, you know, your options there. If you don't want to have 15 years by default, if you want to use your own root, that kind of thing. But just to stress the point that it's pretty automated now, to be honest. You don't really need to do anything from version 7 onward to, you know, we had some issues before in 6.1 where, you know, if there was some synchronization problem, you know, and the certificate renewed from the auto, you know, it was expired, certificate monitor catches it. It does renew, but, you know, the signers may not update everywhere because there may be network problems or some syncing problems across the cell. So now, I mean, the certificate monitor will catch an expired cert, renew it, and every node in the cell will trust it automatically because that root signer is the same. It doesn't change. So it's really, really pretty nice feature, and I just wanted to go over that, how it works. Let's go to slide 24. So this question, how to configure a cell to share a common SSL certificate amongst all the nodes and the deployment manager for SSL encryption of the traffic between the nodes and the nodes to the DM. Also, if tighter security is required, how to authenticate each server in the conversation is in fact an approved server, i.e. Using SSL client authentication. Let's move to slide 25. So while this configuration is possible, we would see customers do this back in like 6.1 days and earlier. We don't recommend doing this with one personal certificate for all the nodes. The new default root certificate implementation, it really allows for greater security and administrative simplicity at the same time. So there really is no need to configure the same personal certificate for all nodes in a cell. I mean, I know the reason to do that is just for simplicity, you know, if you're not really concerned with security. But the second part of that question, for additional security, you can enable client authentication, or what we call two-way auth, in WebSphere, which will force the client to present its personal certificate to the server. Enabling that, really, you just check a box in the SSL configuration for that endpoint. And it should be known that when you want to do client auth, it's only enabled on the server side. So you can't be a client and just make an outbound connection and try to force, you know, two-way. The server side determines that. And I have a link there for the client certificate authentication, how that works. All right, let's go to slide 26.
Okay, thanks to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point, Julie, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
We do have some questions. Our first question comes from David Lowe. Your line is open.
We have created a new key store, and we've submitted the CSR, accepted the certificate from VeriSign, and also added the VeriSign root and intermediate certificate. However, in the chaining process, it's not showing that it's all chained up, even though if you use a browser, you'll see that the personal, intermediate, and root are all chained up. So is that...
Where are you seeing that exactly?
Within the, the certificates itself, within the key store.
Like, are you using iKeyman or the admin console?
Through the admin console.
Okay, so you're just viewing the key store personal or signer section?
In this case, I believe it's on the question. the personal certificate doesn't go in the signer, so it's going to be on the other screen, right?
Right. The personal certificate should show up under personal. The intermediate root may show up under signer.
Right. But even though when we exchange the certificate to the cell default trust, right, and then we added the VeriSign intermediate and root there, it's not showing the chain in there in the cell default trust.
It should be the cell default key store. Did you add the intermediate and root to the key store and the trust store?
Correct, yeah. Well, we did it both ways, but we're still not seeing the chaining.
Yeah, you should see that.
So I guess that would probably be a candidate for a PMR to help us just look at it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Casey. Your line is open.
Hey, my name is Casey from Marsh. Can we create a security domain and disable that global security for that particular JVM? Is it possible?
No, you cannot disable the global security. Global security has to be enabled, you know. And when you set up a security domain, you just have to specify the different scope, you know, for that JVM. So, like, for example, if you want to use a specific security for server one, then you would define the scope settings for the server one and then map the security attribute for that JVM to use depending on your security realm, like a standalone or maybe LDAP or a federated repository or whatever that you want to configure it with.
Basically, disable is not possible for that particular JVM.
That's correct. Yeah, and then another question was asked by Susant, I believe, and that the question was, on a cluster environment like a node 1 and node 2, in this case, if I want to customize the security domain for the particular application server scope, do I need to implement this on a different application level scope on a different cluster, or I can do this on app cluster level? So I think the question is very good here. Once you define the security domain, and if you want to map to the cluster, because the cluster has a different cluster member. So, for example, like a cluster A, and cluster A member 1 and cluster A member 2, and member 1 is running on a node 1 and member 2 is running on node 2, then once you configure the security domain, then you can set the scope for that specific cluster level, and at that point, the security domain feature will be capable of handling the runtime for the member one running on a node one and member two running on a node two.
Our next question comes from Alex. Your line is open.
Yeah, hello. This is Alex with SoftTech. I was wondering if in version 8 we can support multiple LDAPs. We have a customer that would like to do that on 7, and I think in 7 that's not a possibility.
With the multiple LDAP servers, when you use a federated repositories, you can definitely configure multiple LDAP servers, including your custom LDAP repository.
Yeah, and I think the security domain, the feature, will allow you to configure more than one LDAP on specific JVM. And I think that's the beauty about it. You know, so like if you have a difference of JVMs that require specific LDAP authentication and authorization, then it's best to configure the security domain. You know, create a security domain, like a domain A, security domain A, you know, and then define the user registry security attribute scope, and then map the scope for JVM, you know. So those JVM will use that specific LDAP, you know.
Our next question comes from Ram. Your line is open.
Good morning. This is Ram. This is a question regarding renew the new certificates. In case the key store will be corrupted in version 7 or 8, if we stop the DMGR and deleted the key.bitwall and trust.bitwall, and we start the DMGR, so it automatically creates the new key store file, the personal certificates?
So Josh, I couldn't quite hear the question.
Okay. So in any case, the key store will corrupt it.
Okay, you have a corrupt key store?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And if we do that, like stop the DMGR and delete the key.bitwall and trust.bitwall, and once we start the DMGR, the new certificates will be created automatically for 15 years. Is that right?
If the key store is corrupted, I don't think it's going to do that. The key store would have to be removed altogether, and then it would generate new ones with the defaults using the default root cert.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so when we delete those key.bitwall and trust.bitwall, and we restart the DMGR, it's automatically generated the new key store.
Yes, that's right.
Hey, there was one question posted by Mike R.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it seems to use a file-based registry in WAS 6, 1, and 7 only if the realm name is a default VM file-based realm. When you have a file-based, when you configure the federated repository, and by default, out of the box, when you configure, when you create a profile and enable the admin global security using the file-based registry, it puts the realm name as a default realm. You can change whatever the realm name you like to use it in your environment. You know, it just when you have a federated repository, it's basically you have a big umbrella, and under that umbrella, you know, you have a different user registry has been defined. You know, so in that big umbrella, you are calling as a default VM realm. You know, you can call whatever you like. You know, you can call as XYZ as your realm name, and XYZ realm name can apply to different user registry. For example, like file-based registry, LDAP 1, LDAP 2, you know. So that's how it works, basically. You know, it's just a name of the big umbrella for your different registry inside of the federated repository.
Our next question comes from David. Your line is open.
Hello. How does the backup LDAP work as far as fail over and fail back? Is it waiting for a negative response, i.e. timeout, or is it a bad response that it's looking for?
So when you have a couple of LDAP servers in the federated repository, did you configure the failover or not?
It's more a case of asking a general question. I haven't done it, but I noticed in the LDAP setup there was a possibility of setting up a backup LDAP. I'm just wondering under what circumstances does WAS go from the primary to the secondary, and then under what circumstances does it go back to the primary?
So what happens is if you have the LDAP failover setup, right, what it does is whenever the primary goes down, it automatically switches to the secondary or failover LDAP server, and then secondary LDAP server will search for the primary one again for every 15 minutes interval, and it will check for the check to see if that is primary is available if there or not. And only thing you need to make sure is whatever the LDAP, primary LDAP that you have, all that information in the primary LDAP server users and groups, and it should be same in the secondary one also. Then only you can configure the failover LDAP, failover capability here in the federated repositories. Did I answer the question?
Not the detail is what is the WAS looking for. Is it a null response or a bad response from the LDAP? Is it at the network layer or is it the response code it gets from the LDAP?
When the connection to the LDAP completely goes away, that means no response from the LDAP at all.
So it's looking for a network timeout.
Yes.
Yeah, WebSphere application server require LDAP to be highly available. You know, so if one goes down, it will fall back to the failover LDAP if you have a configure in your cell topology. You know, if there is no backup configuration, then basically it will just fail.
But yes, you are right that whenever there is no response from the LDAP, it will fail over, and it takes that one as the primary LDAP is down, and then it fails over to the other one.
So it resends the LDAP search query to the secondary LDAP. There is no need to do anything along those lines.
From user perspective, no, you don't have to do anything. It will take care of connecting or receiving the next request to that particular LDAP, diverting those requests to the second LDAP.
So does the network layer need tuning so that it times out quickly?
Yeah, we have some tuning settings that we can do in the performance section of this particular LDAP, where you can tune the LDAPs to set the timeout values and how long it needs to search and those kind of things. You can very well do that from the admin console of the LDAP section.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Gaurav. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. What is a better way of installing a signed certificate to a particular server in a cell? There are a few options, like when you go to the endpoint configurations, either you can use a cell default SSL settings or node default SSL settings. So if I just need to add a signed certificate on a particular server so that whenever a user hits an application on 9443 port on that application server, it should see the signed certificate. So what is a better place to add that signed certificate?
Hey, Gaurav, this is Josh. Do you mean a signer certificate or a signed personal certificate?
A signed personal certificate.
Okay, like for inbound communication?
Right, for inbound communication, yes.
Okay, so that would depend on which node is running the application that you want to protect with that certificate. By default, in WAS 6.1 onwards, each JVM will use its own node default settings.
Right.
For inbound, and then they share the outbound, which uses the cell default trust store. So in this case, if you want to have a unique inbound, you'd want to put that certificate on just the node that's running that app.
Okay. And for all outbound or for all outbound communication, it uses cell default.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. When you go into the admin console, you can kind of walk it down. You can go to the SSL configuration.
Right.
And then see which key stores it uses, and then see what's in those. You know, go from there.
Okay. So in typical scenario, you will not touch outbound communication, right?
It really just depends on what you're trying to do. I mean, we do a lot of both from the support standpoint. I mean, we see a lot of folks that are making outbound, you know, secure call to web services, and we just need to update the signer certificate. You know, just add a signer into the cell default trust store, and it's good to go.
So if you touch outbound configuration also, does it affect the communication between the deployment manager and the nodes also?
For outbound, it wouldn't matter. You can have, you know, many signers in there, I suppose.
Right, okay.
But the inbound would be a little trickier because you're going to present one certificate by default. So if you're going to change that certificate, then, you know, you can have what might be better than for outbound is to create a dynamic outbound SSL configuration so that anytime, you know, a specific host name, port, or protocol is used, you can filter on that criteria, you know, use a specific SSL configuration, which you can create just for that one connection, and it won't touch your WebSphere config.
Okay. So what configuration does WebSphere uses to communicate between like node and deployment manager? Does it use?
That's going to be, you know, your node default SSL settings, your cell default SSL settings, the ones that are for each JVM. You know, you can look at on the SSL panel, the manage endpoints.
Okay, right.
Those are exactly the ones they use.
Oh, okay. So if I use a personal certificate on a node, does it affect the communication that nodes does with the deployment manager also?
Yeah, it definitely could. If you go in there and select a specific alias that you've, you know, a new certificate that you've put in there, that would definitely affect that. You know, you would be presenting that certificate now, so when the D manager goes to connect to the node's going to present this custom certificate.
Right.
It would need to trust that. So you'd want to put that signer in your cell default trust store and have your node synced.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Mike. The line is open.
Okay. It must be me. Okay, this is Mike R. I had the original, the earlier question with the federated repository and the file base. I guess the question I have is this. I mean, I'm working in a test environment right here. We're pretty much all using base. So normally I would think, you know, if you're just using base, you might use file based repository or something like that. If all you're doing this for is the administrative security for WebSphere. But obviously I don't want to recreate their wheel like, you know, 20, 30 times. So I set it up with an LDAP server, but we don't have a failover, a failover server. But what I noticed is that when the LDAP server goes down, and I try to use, and normally what I would try to use is I would try to use the primary administration user, which is stored in the file, you know, in the file based repository. But if I change the realm name from the default WMF file based realm to something else, just like WebSphere realm or something like that, it would actually not read that user. It would only go to LDAP, and if I left the name as default, if I left the default name in there, it would actually read that user, and I could get into the console. That's the reason why I asked the question.
I think that if you change the realm names in a federated repository configuration panel and file-based registry, it's still with default. Then I think you need to change that as well.
Oh, I see. So the base entry of the file base,
right.
You'd have to change that. Well, I don't think there's an option to do that, though, is there? Certainly not in the console.
You're right. It won't be in console, but...
I think it has to be. I think if you wanted to do that, you'd have to name it when you built the profile. Is that correct?
The workaround would be always taking the backup of the original XML file and modify it manually, but we don't generally recommend it, you know. It's just that if you modify it manually, it can mess up the XML file and basically...
Yeah, definitely. I have this, I have this for base, so it isn't like one big cell. So I'm definitely not disposed to do that like 20, 30 times, so I think I'll just leave the realm name as default. That's pretty much what, you know, the question I had.
Right. Okay. Yep.
But that makes sense now. So the realm name kind of ties into the base entry of the file based of the file-based
right, because,
realm then?
When you look at the Federated Repository Configuration Panel, with the first thing it says realm name, and that realm name, it's like a big umbrella for whatever the different type of LDAP that you configure for it, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, that was one thing that I wanted to do. It's kind of, I guess I would refer to it as like a poor man's backup, because with the environment that I have, this is a development environment. I have a bunch of developers with usernames, and if, you know, heaven forbid I lose the only LDAP server I have, I want to make sure that at least from an administrative point of view, we can get in there and, you know, maybe shut down security temporarily so that we can get them in there and get them back to work. So that if I leave that default alone, I think everything works fine, and it appears to, because I've already experimented with it.
Great.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
Welcome.
We do have a question come in. Suresh,
okay.
Your line is open.
Hi, this is Suresh Dasari. When we are trying to enable certificate authentication, like client certificate authentication, we specified the client cert option in the web.xml of our application, but that was not enough. We had to go into the SSL configuration and change the UOP setting as supported or required for a client certificate to be popped up, the dialog to show up for the picking of a certificate. So without this, it's not really asking for a client certificate, even though we have it in the web.xml. Now, the question is, this setting looks like is like a global to the whole app server, like the server instance. So every time even we log on to admin console or anything we access, it's always asking for a certificate. So is there a way we can only limit that certificate pop-up to only the web.xml or the application which requires the client authentication rather than asking for everything?
That's a very good question. That is correct. It is enabled per SSL configuration in the QOP settings. It is forced on the server side, and that would mean that all applications on that JVM would then have to have client auth, right?
But if I have multiple applications and only one requires, web.xml has one can specify and one doesn't. So is there a limitation at this point?
By default, I would say that that's true in global security. We'd have to test. Maybe you could do that in a security domain and override the SSL configuration and scope it down to just, you know, a server, maybe, if that's good enough.
Okay, we haven't tried the security domain yet, but we were trying to use the same default SSL settings at this point. We can try that attempt. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
We did have another question come in. One moment. Mr. Trasad, your line is open.
Hi. I understand that there is a WebSphere certificate auto-renewal feature, you know, which does the monitoring. I'm curious, you know, what is the behavior, for the self-signed certificates used on the web servers, which are running on unmanaged nodes, but, with an assumption that those web servers are federated to the DMZR. What happens to those certificates as part of the, certificate expiration and renewal monitors?
Are you talking about the plugin key store on the web server?
Yeah.
And the signer certificates there that are used to trust the nodes, or?
No, assume that, you have created a personal certificate on the web servers. Is that also covered as part of the self-certificate expiration monitor and renewal feature in WASH?
This is Ajit. As per my knowledge, I think it doesn't renew the certificate on a plugin side of it. It only updates the self-signed certificate on application server.
You mean the web servers and the plugin KDBs are not at all covered as part of the WebSphere auto-renewal features, is it?
Right. Is this a managed or unmanaged?
Unmanaged node.
Yeah. If it's unmanaged, then I don't think so.
But still, you do see the web server keys and the configurations are created as part of the DMGR configuration.
Right, you'll see the keys created for that. You know, but I think I have noticed that that the plugin, if it's unmanaged, then it doesn't renew the cell phone certificate once it's expired.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Got it. Thanks.
I'm showing no further questions.
Okay. Thanks, Julie. I've been monitoring the chat session, and I believe there's a few questions there that have not been answered yet, and I'll attempt to go through those. The first one from Richard is it possible to configure a unique key store on the same various configurations as was presented for domains? Specifically, need a unique key store and default certificate presentation for each cluster, as we may host multiple applications, one per cluster, and need each to present a unique certificate.
If I'm understanding this correctly, I believe you can do this. Each cluster will have its own configuration, and you're having one app per cluster, so they would all have the same personal certificate.
Hi, this is Ajit. So I believe, if you understand correctly, is like he's talking about like a clustering in terms of like node, like a node 1, node 2. And when you create a profile, app server profile 1 on node 1, we will create the self-signed certificate as well as the root certificate. And you'll have a same principle for like a node 2. So like a node 2, and if you create a profile on that node, you'll have a self-signed certificate as well. So I guess, is that what the customer is asking? Or is that something like he wants to create a new SSL configurations with like a new SSL repeater?
Rachel just responded, the config is most like domain 3. The AVM's clustered from multiple nodes. Would you like to move on to the next question?
Yeah.
Okay, Sandy has asked this question. The default root cert for the WAS environment gets renewed automatically even if the environment or cell is down, let's say in DR or standby environments, or does WAS have to be up and running for the certificate to be renewed?
The default root certificate, I think I answered that in there, but if I'm understanding it correctly, the default root lasts 15 years, so the chances that you would even be around to see that renewal happen, I mean, you might have a new WebSphere version, new hardware, you know what I mean? Whether the cell is up or down, I mean, the monitor would have to be running on a JVM that's active to renew it. Once it's renewed, that's a scenario I've never run into. I'm not sure what implications there are when the root expires. That's a long ways off.
Right.
But I think in the WebSphere feature, when you look at the certificate expiration panel, it will also renew the root certificate.
Right.
So if the environment is set up for the 15 years, and if you believe that your certificate might getting expired, the WebSphere will handle to update that certificate, root certificate as well.
Okay.
But like Josh said, you know, that the environment may not be up and running for 15 years. You know, it may be, you know, a new version of the WebSphere or new version hardware or something, you know.
Okay. Monica asked, I think, a simple question. Do you see a lot of customers using the security domains?
I would say yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely picked up. You know, it was kind of slow, it seemed like, at first when it was first introduced in WAS 7, but I would say we're definitely getting more calls on it and folks trying to use it. I personally see it a lot with Espinego. People do like to, you know, scope it down to one JVM or one server and have it only active on that one. So, yes, definitely.
Okay. And I apologize if some of these questions have already been answered. It's hard to keep track. Satish also asked this question. May I know the difference between web agents and application server agents of SiteMinder configured on WebSphere?
I'm not sure I really know the difference there with SiteMinder. SiteMinder is a third-party SSO product
that customers can purchase and use with WebSphere. Configuring that would be handled generally by SiteMinder support. I know they have a TAI, which is a Trusted Association Interceptor, which they do configure on WebSphere. And we pretty much put a class name in, and it's their class to enable it. But beyond that, we don't really do anything with it. The configuration is all on SiteMinder.
Okay. Then another question. Does the auto-renewal feature of certificates renew self-signed certificates on web servers running on unmanaged nodes?
No. The answer is no.
Okay.
We do have another question online when you're ready.
Okay, go ahead.
David, your line is open.
When you have an issue with the SSL certificates, considering there's so many stores available and so many different configurations, and as we tend to use our own internal CA, because we're used to version 5 onwards and haven't moved to the version 7 stuff for the older servers because we can't, is there a way of telling which certificate has expired when it comes up with, you know, the SSL messages in the system outlog? Because it just says, you know, certificate, bad certificate, or bad date, but it doesn't say which one.
You mean in general or for these specific CA certificates?
Well, it's just trying to try and we're seeing the messages in the log, but the systems are working, so we think it's, say, the one that was in the flash where it was the default certificate for SOAP, connection, which we haven't touched. So is there a way of telling which certificate has expired when you're just getting a bad date message in the system outlook?
I'm not sure. A bad date message, what do you mean? Like it's...
Well, you get a SSL error message saying, say, that there's a certificate bad date, i.e. that the certificate has expired, but it doesn't refer to which certificate it's talking about.
Yeah, I think this, Ajit, if you enable the SSL equal all and GSSE trace, it will print out the serial number of the bad certificate. The other options would be you can run a key tool command to check all your key store and trust store and see which certificate is expired. And once you identify the key store, and you can just open it up into the iKeyman tool and then remove them, or you can just go into the website admin console and remove those certificates.
Thank you.
But from the system out log, it's not possible to just tell which certificate is expired.
Right, so you turn on trace. Cool.
Our next question comes from James. Your line is open.
Oh, yes. I have a question about the two-way SSL. You mentioned that in order to enable the two-way SSL, we need to check the checkbox of the QOP. So I would like to know if this is equivalent as the version 6 in the QOP, we need to select the client authentication as request or support or not.
That's correct. Yeah, it's the same.
Oh, so it's the same. So is it if we check the checkbox, is it equivalent to required or supported?
Right. Supported won't break you if the clients aren't going to present a certificate. Required would mean that, you know, inbound communications would come in and we would then ask the client to present their certificate, and they would need to do that. If they do not, then, you know, or we'd have to trust it. But supported is another option. I mean, if the client can't present a certificate and we trust it, great. If not, we will trust it with one way.
Oh, okay. So supported is one way and required is two way. Is that correct?
Technically, yes. When you set it to supported, you can get away with one way. That's what that allows. So you're not going to if the client can't present a certificate, it's not going to break the connection. It'll at least be one way.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question comes from Sandy. Your line is open.
Yeah, my question is that we talked about federated repositories, and the question related to that is, we have, like, say, several applications within the cell, and I know that each one of them, we at this point of time, we have only one, you know, single LDAP repository, which is really for the administration of the WebSphere security, global security as such. But within their application, they use LDAP some kind of a repository, usually LDAP calls and authenticate users by themselves. So what is the difference between they doing something in the application and authenticating users by that way versus we doing in the WebSphere WAS repositories, federated repository?
So you mean to say your application is doing some LDAP authentications by calling calling the application coding level?
Yeah, making LDAP calls within the application, authenticating users that way. Yes,
so
right.
That means it is not at all coming. WebSphere will not be in picture at all, and because you are making a Java calls to security Java calls to the LDAP directory by opening a connection and other stuff. There is a lot of difference. Like whatever the LDAP server, LDAP use setup for the administrators will only be used from the WAS side. Whatever the setup you have in WAS.
Right. So if I were to take that, whatever they do in application repository, put in the WAS, I'm just trying to find out, and if this has to be a deep-level question, you don't have to answer. You can just send me the reading material on that. But I was just kind of, trying to find out the benefit doing something like that within an application versus via federated repository. Do I have any additional benefit we are putting that into WAS config via federated repository?
Yeah, the additional benefit is you don't have to change the code again and again, and all you need to have is set up a federated repository and have the application to use it, and WAS will take care of it. But since it is in your application right now, if there is any changes to the application, then you need to deploy that, redeploy it, and other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Showing no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. We're getting close to running out of time, but I'll try to go through a couple more that I've seen in the group chat from the top. Here's a question. As we have configured multiple LDAP on v6.1, can I upgrade WAS 6.1 to WAS 8.5 without making any changes to security?
Yeah, yes. If you migrate the WebSphere 6.1 to a new version of it, it will migrate the security configuration as well.
Yes, in the other sense, yes, you can. You can migrate.
Okay, thanks. Then another question, can I replicate the security.xml?
I guess the question is not clear. What do you mean of?
So you mean copying the security.xml from 6.1 to 8.0?
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't say.
We do not recommend that.
Okay. Some of these questions have been answered in the group chat, I'm seeing. Can anyone explain how to configure SSL?
That was kind of a general question. I answered it up in the chat, but the when you enable security in WebSphere, SSL gets automatically turned on.
Okay.
You don't really have to do anything special to just enable SSL for your applications. You just access them, and they'd be protected.
Okay. And then another question... asking, is this a true statement? For federated repository to work correctly, you should have unique ID and unique DN combination.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes. If you have a same UID in a multiple repository, then the federated repository will fail. So if you try to log into the WebSphere admin console or some other, you get an authentication failure,
Okay, thank you. I think we're going to have to end the question and answer session, but in the next slide coming up, you're going to see an email address that you could send questions to, and I do monitor that, so feel free to use that mechanism. And I want to thank everyone for their participation today. It's been very active. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You'll be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE subscribe to get a list of the mailing lists. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please feel free to let us know as well. And that, by the way, is the email address that if you have any questions that were not addressed in today's session, feel free to send them in, and I'll make sure they get relayed to the panel. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. We do welcome any ideas that you may have. I want to thank everyone again for your participation, and at this time, we will end the presentation. Thank you all, and thanks to the panel for presenting today.
Thank you.